Well, welcome everybody to our final call. And I just want to say up front, congratulations. I know that some of you started a few days late and will be continuing for a few more days. But nonetheless, I just want to really congratulate you on committing to this cleanse for 3 weeks. It is, you know, something that you really had to think about doing, an investment on your part. And I really, really hope that you all are feeling the benefits of the cleanse. We did a little sharing. Candace was on the line, and thank you for so much for sharing, Candace. And she was sharing that she is sleeping really, really well now and being super productive and organized and getting all kinds of tests done, and her stomach pain has completely gone away. So these are just some of the benefits of removing potentially allergenic or toxic foods from your body, really supporting your liver and your gallbladder to help get rid of those toxins and just feel really, really good again. So today I want to talk about moving into maintenance. And I'm definitely going to pause at different times, and if you have a question, please jump in and ask. But this is very, very important because, you know, we don't want to go just from cleanse back to what we were doing before, because we don't know if what we were doing before was serving us at the highest level. So, but on the other hand, obviously, you know, it would be hard to continue cleansing 365 days of the year, and probably not something you'd want to do anyway. We're social beings. We have holidays. We have birthdays, anniversaries, and all that type of thing too. So what is the best way to proceed coming off of a cleanse? So if you are following along on a laptop and you want to follow along on a PowerPoint presentation that I have, you can go now to www.nutritionwithbeth.com, and then that's /form. So again, www.nutritionwithbeth.com/forms. And if you go to download call recordings, you'll see PowerPoint presentation under call 3, which is coming soon. And you can just click on that PowerPoint presentation and follow along with me. And if you're listening to the recording, no problem, just listen along, and then you can always go back and refer to the PowerPoint slides. Okay, so let's go ahead and talk about moving into maintenance. What do you want to do now? So the first thing I really want to talk about is reintroducing eliminated foods back into the diet. If you're feeling really good right now and you really don't want to reintroduce dairy or gluten or sugar or caffeine back into your diet, absolutely stay on the elimination diet as long as you like. However, I'm sure that there might come a point where you're curious to know whether or not, hey, you know, what I'm feeling really good now. What was making me not feel so good? Was it gluten? Was it dairy? Was it sugar? Was it all of them? You know, I'm not really sure. So this is the perfect, perfect time for you to reintroduce these foods back into your diet and really get a sense of whether this food is good for you or if it's toxic for you. So when you reintroduce a food back into your diet, you might not notice a difference at all, or you might notice either an immediate reaction or what we call a delayed food reaction. So when you introduce a food back into your diet, what's very, very important is to add one food at a time and do it every 72 hours. And the reason for this is because a food takes generally about 72 hours to completely pass through your body. So from the time you put it into your mouth until the time you eliminate it, it's about 72 hours. So for example, let's say you want to test dairy and you want to say, hey, you know, I'm not sure about dairy. I have a feeling that gluten's really not good for me, but I'm not sure about dairy. So I want to test cow dairy and see if I notice any difference in how I feel if I eat cow dairy. So what you would do is get up, let's say tomorrow morning is Wednesday morning, and have, like, for example, half a cup of cottage cheese or a cup of cow yogurt, you know, whatever your, you know, dairy source is, and then write down exactly when you reintroduce that food back into your diet. So if it was tomorrow morning, tomorrow is Wednesday, you would write down Wednesday, 7:30 a.m. and the date. And then what you want to do is journal for the next 3 days. And this is really, really important because remember, you can have an immediate reaction, but you can also, because that food stays in your body for 72 hours, you can get a reaction the next day from it or the next day, up to 72 hours later. This is, again, what we call delayed food reactions. So very, very important to journal, because if you don't journal, what's going to happen? You're going to forget that you had, you know, reintroduced that food, and then you might, you know, get like a little headache or some stiffness in your joints or feel kind of foggy maybe on Thursday, but you don't relate it back to the dairy. So that's why it's very, very important to food journal. So what you want to look for is, do you experience gas after you eat the food or bloating? That could be right after, right? Constipation, any type of cramping, heartburn. Another thing to look for is water retention or weight gain, because when you have a food sensitivity, what happens is that often that food is not being completely digested, and then the large protein molecules are getting across, you know, getting from the gut across into the bloodstream, and your immune system sees this protein particle or molecule, says, who is this? I don't recognize it, because it hasn't been completely broken down before entering the bloodstream, and then mounts a response against this food particle, you know, just like as if it was going to, you know, mount a response against a pathogen, you know, when you get sick. And what happens is that draws a lot of histamine and water to that area, and then you start holding on to water weight and you get really, really bloated. So you might be able to detect whether or not you have a food sensitivity just by noticing whether or not you gain weight from eating that food. So that's another way to, you know, use, you know, you can use your scale to assess whether or not you might have a food sensitivity or food intolerance. And other delayed food sensitivity reactions include difficulty sleeping. That can definitely be one. Kind of, you know, feeling foggy brain, not quite mentally clear or sharp. Mood swings, definitely. Actually increased food cravings as well. Feeling anxiety. Especially with dairy, you know, people often notice like they have frequent clearing of the throat or postnasal drip or runny or stuffy nose. I have a friend, if she eats dairy, she immediately, her nose starts running right after she eats dairy. But then I have had other clients in the past who really noticed that their postnasal drip cleared up when they got rid of dairy. Other things you might notice after you eat a food that you're sensitive to is that you kind of get like a palpitations or a rapid heartbeat. And then also definitely, you know, skin eruptions, skin rashes, and then any type of swelling and or stiffness in the joints can also be an indication of a food sensitivity. And remember, especially like with, you know, stiffness in the joint, you might not notice that right away. You might not notice that till like 2 days later, okay? So moving on, what I would suggest is that if you do experience symptoms, like you're like, oh, yeah, I'm definitely experiencing a symptom here from eating this food that I reintroduced back into my diet, what I would suggest is remove that food from your diet again and then add it back in after 4 days, because remember, we got to give time for the food to clear out. And if you experience a similar reaction the second time, you've definitely identified the food culprit. And you might actually feel confident enough after the first time, and that's fine too, but this is just a way to really say, okay, yeah, it was definitely that food. If that's the case, then what I suggest is keeping that food out of your diet anywhere from 3 to 6 months, depending on how severe your reaction is, and then try reintroducing it again. If you give it, you know, 3 to 6 months, what can happen over time is that your immune system, it just tones down, and it's not on such a high alert to be looking for that. And you might be able to reintroduce that food back into your diet on what we call a rotation diet, which means that you can eat that food like once every 4 days to keep the immune system reaction low. Now, there's some foods, you know, obviously that people, you know, some kids, for example, and even adults are, they have immediate, reactions to things like peanuts where they're actually in a lot of danger. These are, different types of reactions. We're talking about reactions where, your immune system over time has just become very, very alert and looking, for these certain food particles. But if you take it out for a long time and then eat those foods on a rotation type basis, your immune system is going to be, as you know, I like to say, toned down and not such high alert. And then, of course, not likely to create like these huge responses to the food, which again draw histamine and water and all of all of the things I was mentioning before. And then, of course, do not reintroduce the second food that you want to test. Like, let's say you want to test gluten, for example, or wheat, until you're clear that you do not have symptoms from the first food. So that's really, really important. So what you wouldn't want to do today is, if you're really curious to know how food is affecting you, is tomorrow to go out and have a piece of pizza, because think about what pizza has. It has gluten, it has cheese, it has sugar in the sauce. So there would be no way for you to identify, if like you didn't feel so good after eating the pizza, which you probably wouldn't, there would be really no way for you to identify, was it the gluten, was it the dairy, was it the sugar, or was it all three? Okay? Now, if you are not, you're not a good journaler, or you just have a hard time figuring, you're just real busy during the day and you have a hard time, with figuring out if something's really affecting your body, another thing you can consider doing is food sensitivity testing, and that is something that I offer through my targeted nutrition programs. And it's just a way for you to, identify potential food sensitivities and other ones that, you might have that we didn't even address during the course of this cleanse. And sometimes people are sensitive to the oddest things. Like, for example, I have a colleague that cannot eat lettuce. Lettuce just really does her in. She has a major food sensitivity to lettuce. I have somebody else that tested very high to raspberries. And, they eliminated raspberries from their diet and they felt much better. So we're all unique. But obviously, for the purpose of this type of cleanse, we can't eliminate everything. So we just eliminated some of the real big hitters, which are dairy and gluten. Okay. Another test you can do, which is kind of a fun at-home test. And, of course, this is by no means 100% accurate, but it can help, just help you. It's another tool to lead you in the right direction. It's Dr. Arthur Coco's Pulse Test for Allergies. And basically what you do is you get up in the morning and you get your baseline pulse before you test your substance. So just get up in the morning before eating and take your pulse for a full 60 seconds. And write that down. Then you make a test substance. So let's say you wanted to test wheat. Then you would eat just plain wheat, like, for example, dry shredded wheat without any milk. Just eat, a couple of those shredded wheat cereal bars. And then what you do is you take your pulse at 20 minutes after you eat the test substance, and then again at 60 minutes, and then again at 90 minutes after, eating a good portion of the test substance. And if you're sensitive to the food, what you're going to notice is there's going to be a difference of 8 or more beats, either higher or lower. They can go in either direction. Now, after you eat any food, your pulse generally goes up a little bit. But this is where you're looking for a difference of 8 or more beats, either increased or decreased. And that also can be an indication that you're sensitive to that food. So that's another way to help you assess whether or not a food's good for you or a food's not doing so good for your body. Okay? So I want to pause there. And does anyone have any questions? If you do, please feel free to ask, because I know this is a really big thing and really important, and just want to make sure you understand. Okay, so I don't think we have any questions. So let's, move on to what is balanced eating now. And I think, it's going to be a little different for everyone, but there's just a few points that I really want to, make sure that you understand before, the end of our time together. Calories do count. They are important, but where they come from counts a whole lot more. Like, for example, you might have a cookie and half of an avocado, and they might have the same amount of calories, but how they affect your metabolism is so incredibly different. Like, for example, if you eat a cookie, most likely it's going to be high in sugar or some type of sweetener, which is going to raise your glucose, and then that's going to, of course, signal the pancreas to send out insulin. And then when insulin is high, then you store fat. Whereas you eat the avocado, the half of the avocado, and it's going to have a totally different effect on your metabolism. It's not going to raise your blood glucose, it's not going to raise your insulin, and it's not going to send signals for your body to store fat. So, really there is, a huge, huge difference when you eat different types of foods, even if they have the same amount of calories. Again, calories count only to a certain point. They don't necessarily affect your metabolism, though. They can, of course, eating too many calories of any food, even good foods, over time,
Abby.
can, lead to increased weight gain. But the type of foods you eat has a much, much bigger impact on your metabolism. Okay. So, if you're following along on the slides, I have a little chart here of a balanced food circle. And I love this food circle because I love, when I think about my meals, I like to envision a plate. And when I think of my plate, what I think of is half of that plate is going to be vegetables. And it could be a mix of steamed vegetables with raw vegetables, like a salad, for example, or lightly sauteed vegetables with a salad. But about half of my plate is vegetables. The other one-fourth is just good, clean, lean protein, whether that's fish, whether that's turkey, chicken, or lean grass-fed beef, just really good, lean, clean, quality protein. And then, of course, my fats are coming in through the protein, because most of the protein sources are going to have some type of fat. And then also, I might be using a salad dressing, like olive oil, for example, on my salad, or maybe I cut up a little avocado into my salad, or add some, pine nuts or walnuts to my salad. That's the way that I get my healthy fats in. And then for days that I'm very, very active, like let's say I went on a big hike or just had a very, very active day, on those days I might consider adding a higher, a higher fiber, higher starchy carbohydrate, like half of a sweet potato, for example, or maybe, a small serving of brown rice or quinoa. Just depending again on my level of activity. I find that on the days where I'm home and I'm working from my office all day, and maybe I didn't, have a good workout that day, I skip that and find I don't need it. On the days that I, worked out really hard or just had a very, very active day, I find that I might, need the extra carbohydrate there. But again, that really does depend on level of activity. And we're all very biochemically unique, we're very genetically unique, and how many carbohydrates we can tolerate, especially from the starchy carbohydrates that come from like yams and sweet potatoes, parsnips, and your grains like rice and quinoa, for example, really also depends on our metabolism and our genetics. And that is another type of test that I do offer. Really, really cool test. I've actually done it on myself, which shows, your specific genes that are associated with how you metabolize foods. And they've been able to figure out, people that can actually eat, a balanced diet, people that need to eat actually based on their genetic type, a lower carbohydrate diet. So really, really fascinating where genetic testing is taking us these days. And what's great about genetic testing is it keeps coming down lower and lower in price as it becomes more available and accessible. And you can really get a good idea of, the best type of diet to suit you, based on your genetics. So very, very, very fascinating research. Okay, so moving on to, as far as just wanted to talk talk just a little bit about the roles of the three major macronutrients, which are protein, carbohydrates, and fat. Protein, we definitely need to make sure that we're getting enough protein. We can eat too much protein, and we can eat not enough protein. And it seems like the majority of people, especially women, don't eat enough protein. But then, you know, there's some people that eat way too much protein and not the best type of protein either. So it's really just, you know, finding that balance. And I think it's very, very important to remember that protein does increase your metabolic rate, increases your sense of fullness. And it's absolutely the amino acids that come from protein are absolutely necessary to make your neurotransmitters like dopamine and serotonin and also all of your hormones. And important to remember, too, that protein recommendations do shift with the amount of exercise you do, with illness, like folks that are recovering from surgery, for example, usually need to have more protein. So, you know, your protein requirements will shift, you know, as you go through different decades of life and perhaps as you engage in different types of activities. But getting enough protein to support, you know, your muscles and your bones and your hormones and your neurotransmitters is what's really important. So if you have access to do a body composition analysis or metabolic analysis where you can actually get a sense of your lean body mass, or what they also call fat-free mass, you know, that's called bioimpedance testing or scales, and you know, Tanita scales you can buy at places like Costco, for example, and they will actually assess your fat percentage versus your lean body mass, which is everything else except for your fat. From there, you can get an idea of how much protein you need to eat. So it's recommended about 3/4 to 1 gram per pound of fat-free mass. So that's not your total weight, it's your fat-free mass. So again, 3/4 to 1 gram of protein per pound of fat-free mass. So if you have access to a Tanita scale or a scale that does bioimpedance testing, then you can use that equation to get a better feel for whether or not you're getting enough protein in your diet. Okay, and then as far as carbohydrates go, you know, carbohydrates definitely have received a very bad rap over the last, I would say, 5 to 10 years, and for very good reason. A lot of the carbohydrates that we generally eat are very processed carbohydrates, perhaps made from white flour, and really don't do a whole lot of good for our bodies at all. But remember that your fruits and your vegetables are your carbohydrates, too. And those are very, very, very important. We do need to get those types of carbohydrates in our diet, right? Because they provide our fiber, all of our phytonutrients, which are plant nutrients, are loaded with all kinds of antioxidants. They provide our brain fuel and help raise our serotonin, actually, which is our neurotransmitter that makes us feel calm and at peace. And then it also raises our insulin, which we do, you know, insulin is good to a certain point. So I think somebody is on the line, and I can hear background noise. So if you wouldn't mind muting yourself by hitting *6. So *6. Thank you. Okay. And then as far as fats go, I just really want to, again, reiterate the importance of eating good fats. Because if you did nothing else but change the types of fats that you ate, you would be doing yourself such a great service, because the rancid fats, the trans fats, the fried fats, they actually are, you know, oxidize and create a lot of stress on the body when consumed. And also they have the ability to slow down, or they actually do slow down your metabolism. Whereas your good fats, you know, for example, the fats that come from omega-3 essential fatty acids actually help increase your metabolism. So definitely just by looking at the types of fats that you eat can have a profound impact on your overall health and your metabolism. And, of course, we know the good fats are also really good for our brain health and our joint health, for really good skin. And we need good fats also to help us absorb our fat-soluble vitamins like vitamin A and vitamin D and vitamin E and vitamin K. So just real important, whenever possible, choose good, either organic monounsaturated fats, which would include like olive oil, for example, or the omega-3 polyunsaturated fats that we find in our fish like salmon, and hemp seed oil and flax seed oil or, chia seeds or flax seeds. And then again, remember that we don't want to put rancid or damaged fats into our body. So if we're doing high heat cooking, that's when you would actually want to use a saturated fat that is less prone to oxidation and becoming rancid. So that's when you would might want to use something like coconut oil, because it stands up very, very well to high heat. So just a reminder there, because it's really, really, really important. And of course, moving into maintenance, continue really focus on how much liquid you're drinking, especially water, because even mild dehydration causes your stress hormones to go up and it causes your metabolism to decrease. So very, very important to assess, how much water you're drinking. Are you drinking at least half of your body weight in ounces every day, at least? Very, very important. And then I say that, because I've noticed in the past that I think I'm drinking a lot of water, which I normally do, but I think what happens is you start getting into a routine, you start getting really busy, and I say, oh yeah, I'm drinking 8 to 10 glasses of water a day. And then I do a water check on myself and figure out that I'm not drinking quite 8 to 10. I might only be drinking 6. So every once in a while, just assess how much water you're drinking and make sure that you're keeping up, with that. And also remember that by the time that you get thirsty, you're already dehydrated. So it's very, very, very important to stay really well hydrated. And some other signs of dehydration can include like fatigue and weakness. So if you're all of a sudden feeling really tired, just try drinking a big glass of water and see if that helps. Also, headaches are definitely associated with dehydration, as well as heartburn, constipation, high blood pressure, asthma, allergies. These are all conditions that are associated with dehydration. So very, very important to keep up on your fluid intake, especially water. And what I found is that if you're not a big water drinker, and you drink mostly caffeinated drinks, sometimes what can happen in certain people is that you actually lose your thirst sensation. So you don't even get thirsty anymore. And what helps to get that back is actually starting to drink water again. I remember many, many years ago, before I even started studying nutrition, I was never thirsty for water. And it wasn't until I started drinking water that I actually regained my thirst sensation. Now, I get thirsty very easily because I retrain my body to recognize when I'm dehydrated. Okay. So I think a couple people have joined us. So I'm going to just pause real quick. And if you have a question, you can go ahead and unmute yourself and hit star 6. If not, we'll just move right along. And I just paused to actually have a big gulp of water. So, and a couple just, rules for healthy eating. If you can eat within 1 hour of waking up, that's optimal because it just gets your whole digestive system going, gets your metabolism going. Obviously, if you get up and you work out in the morning, that might not be possible, but then you just want to eat within half an hour to an hour after you work out. Try to get in veggies with every single meal. And if that's not possible, like if you have one meal, which is more like a snack-like meal due to your workload, then at least try to get in lots of veggies at two of your meals. And also, when you can, unless you have hypoglycemia or very low blood sugar, try to eat, I would say try to stop eating within 2 to 3 hours before you go to bed. And the reason being is that you want to let your body really restore and regenerate while it sleeps. And if you eat right before you go to bed, then you're putting a big load on your digestive system. And then, that takes away from your body focusing on restoring and regenerating in other areas. Like, for example, if you eat right before you go to bed, your liver, of course, has a role in digesting fats. So if you're taxing your liver with that duty instead of its other duties of, you know, cleaning the blood and getting rid of toxins, you can see how you're kind of taking away from some of your that liver time, and your liver tends to be most active in the late night or wee hours of the morning too. And another thing that I think is very, very important is when you can really try to sit down when you eat and chew your food really slowly and mindfully, and practice gratitude when you're eating too. I found I attended a retreat about a year ago with a friend, and they asked us to, you know, it was a meditation retreat. I'd never done this thing, this kind of thing before. And they asked us to bring our own lunch. And so I brought my, you know, lunch, which is was pretty much my normal size lunch. And during the lunch break, though, we weren't allowed to talk to anybody. We had to eat in silence and really practice chewing our food slowly. And what was so interesting to me was that I got halfway through my lunch and I was completely full, completely satisfied. And normally, I would have easily eaten that full lunch. So by, you know, just slowing down, chewing my food a little more slowly, eating more mindfully, I actually got filled up very, very quickly. So eating fast, you know, we just don't give our, you know, we just don't give our brains the chance to say, hey, stop, you know, I'm full. So that's another thing when you have the opportunity, just try to slow down. And what I, you know, a little challenge I have for you is the next time you eat, whether that's lunch or dinner today, try at least with 2 to 3 bites of your food, chewing the food 20 times before you swallow. And it's just amazing, like, how that feels and how – and it just puts into perspective how quickly we eat. I'm always constantly having to tell myself to slow down when I eat because I tend to be running around and doing this and that. And so I – what does help me is if I actually sit down, because that slows me down a little bit, and then I, you know, make a point to at least try to eat a few bites of food really, really slowly so that I'm more mindful, and then I just have a better sense of actually when I'm content, when I'm full. Okay, moving right along. I'm not going to go through every single one of these slides if for those of you who are following along, but a couple other things I wanted to make about, you know, some great rules for healthy eating. If you find, you know, when you find that perfect meal, you'll notice that it will last you about 4 to 6 hours. So when you find that perfect combination of protein, fats, and carbohydrates for you, you will see that it lasts you about 4 to 6 hours without feeling like your, you know, your blood sugar is going down or without feeling like you're getting irritable or you can't think. For me, I know one of my best breakfasts, for example, is when I do 2 to 3 eggs with tons of veggies, add a little fat like avocado or maybe some olive oil, and then some fruit, which I usually eat my fruit before. That kind of breakfast holds me over for about four to 6 hours. Whereas if I were to sit down and like have a bowl of oatmeal with just some, you know, berries and nuts, that would probably last me like 3 hours. So it just, you know, it takes, you know, a little experimentation on your part, but I definitely recommend, you know, figuring out what type of meal, what ratio of protein, carbohydrates, and fats really, really sustains you. Now, what you don't want to do is go much longer than 6 hours without eating, just because that will start raising your stress hormones again. So, you know, I would say anywhere from 4 to 6 hours if you eat the right meal should sustain you. Now, this does not apply to people that have true hypoglycemia. If you have true hypoglycemia where your blood sugar is low, it's not reactive hypoglycemia, but actually true hypoglycemia, then of course you always want to carry a small snack that contains protein with you. So you are definitely the exception if you have hypoglycemia. And I've also provided you with some just, you know, what some good breakfast, lunch, and dinner sample menu ideas as we, you know, I did previously in the sample menu guide, and also listed some superfoods there for you. And, you know, I would look at this list of superfoods and say, hey, you know, am I getting a few of those every day? And then, of course, these are, you know, this is just a small list of superfoods, you know, includes like wild salmon and garlic and green tea and beets and sardines, pumpkin seeds. your dark leafy greens, for example. But you know, as more whole foods are studied and more research is done, other foods also kind of move up into that list. And I also really encourage you to use spices, like fresh herbs and spices, whenever you can, because there's so much therapeutic value in herbs and spices. Like, for example, rosemary is huge when it comes to having anti-inflammatory properties. It's also really, really good, you know, for the brain. And you could even add it, you know, to tea in the morning. Curcumin or turmeric, for example, is also very highly anti-inflammatory, and it's a really, really wonderful spice too. So all of your spices and your herbs can be very therapeutic, and using them often in cooking really, really increases the therapeutic value that you're getting from your foods. You know, as far as nutrient deficiencies, unfortunately, the United States has become a nation where, you know, food is definitely accessible for most people. In fact, we probably have, you know, access to too much food, but unfortunately the food that we have access to is not the best food for us. In fact, it's actually usually very toxic, all the processed food and the fast foods. And I, you know, have found over the years, just by looking at different studies and, you know, even talking to farmers, that, you know, the soil, you know, our soil has become very, very deplete in nutrients that we need, that our body desperately needs. And so whenever you can, you know, buy organic, because the studies do show that organic produce usually has higher amounts of essential vitamins and minerals in it. And that has to do, of course, with the soil that those vegetables and fruits are grown. So whenever you can, you know, choose that option. There's also a lot of other things that deplete our nutrients, not just our soil. You know, a lot of our lifestyle factors. For example, drinking alcohol. You know, let's say you have a glass of wine with dinner every night. You know, alcohol is notorious for depleting the B vitamins. So if you do have a glass of wine with dinner every night, hopefully not during the lifestyle, then it would be a very good idea to make sure that you're taking a high-quality B-complex formula, because it's well known that alcohol does deplete the B vitamins. Pharmaceuticals, and even some really common pharmaceuticals, birth control pills, for example, are notorious for depleting vitamin B6, folic acid, magnesium, zinc, all these very, very important vitamins and minerals. And the list goes on when it comes to pharmaceuticals. Definitely notorious for depleting very, very critical vitamins and minerals. So if you're on a certain medication, you want to know if it does deplete any specific vitamins or minerals, feel free to send an email and I can answer that for you. Okay. So I do recommend, you know, based on our lifestyle today and based on the fact that our soil is just not as rich in nutrients as it used to be, to be on a good quality multivitamin mineral, just to cover your bases. Studies show that Americans are not meeting just the RDA, which is the recommended daily allowance for several nutrients a day. And remember that the RDA is that's just the amount that we need to prevent, like, a vitamin deficiency disease, like scurvy, for example. It definitely has nothing to do with optimal. So, again, you know, very, very important to be on a good quality multivitamin mineral to cover the bases. I would also encourage you moving into maintenance as a way to kind of slightly keep up with your detoxification, and I would, or if you want to put it this way, gently cleanse on a daily basis. Add the green drinks. The green drinks are help alkalize the body. They're very cleansing. They're very anti-inflammatory. So having a green drink a day can really, really help you gently detoxify on a daily basis. And if that's a little too much for you, if you don't have a juicer or a Vitamix, then you can use the paleo greens, just, you know, one scoop of paleo greens a day, mix it with water, and then that's another way to get your concentrated greens on a daily basis and a way to, you know, keep up the detoxification process. Definitely, too, I would recommend doing a fiber check every 3 to 4 months. and assess whether you're getting 25 to 35 milligrams of fiber per day. And this is really important because fiber does bind to toxins in the gut and removes them from the body. So we do need to make sure that we're getting plenty of fiber to aid in the detoxification process on a daily basis. It's not that easy to get 25 to 35 milligrams of fiber per day. So you might find that you actually do need to take a fiber supplement. You've been taking the Paleo Fiber, that's a great product, or perhaps you love, flax, you like to grind up flax seeds or chia seeds, you can do that as well. But definitely making sure that you're getting at least 25 to 35 milligrams of fiber per day to ensure that you're not only having healthy bowel movements and that type of thing, but that's, of course, part of the detoxification process as well. But remember, again, that fiber can bind to toxins in the gut and remove them from the body. I would also recommend, if you are a person that does really well with structure and you really like the shakes, you can definitely continue to do a shake a day and use the Paleo Meal dairy-free or the Paleo Meal whey-based if you don't have a sensitivity to whey protein. I find that my groups, usually I would say anywhere from 50 to 75% of the folks in the group want to continue with one shake a day because they like how the shakes make them feel. They like the ease of getting in a good protein breakfast in the morning. With the Paleo Meal dairy-free, and also knowing that they're getting good vitamins and minerals in that formula as well as specific minerals to regulate their blood sugar. So if you like the structure, that you like how the shakes make you feel, and you know that you're more likely to get in a good, nutritious, higher protein breakfast in the morning if you have a shake, you can certainly continue on with the Paleo Meal. I wouldn't recommend doing the Paleo Cleanse at high quantities on a daily basis indefinitely because, we kind of are creatures of rhythm, and so, it's not like you want to be detoxifying heavily every single day. The cleanses are meant to, be done on a regular basis, and that might differ for everybody. You might like to do a cleanse twice a year. Other people might like to do shorter cleanses four times a year. So I don't recommend continuing to use the Paleo Cleanse on a daily basis at the high doses, which would be like 2 scoops and a shake. However, if you really like how the Paleo Cleanse is making you feel and you want to continue for a while longer, certainly adding 1 scoop along with the Paleo Meal dairy-free is absolutely fine. I just don't recommend cleansing, at the higher level of 2 scoops of Paleo Cleanse indefinitely. Take breaks and determine the best schedule for you to cleanse on a yearly basis, whether you want to do that twice a year or do shorter cleanse 4 times a year. And then when you are ready to do a very committed cleanse where you're eliminating sugar and the big allergenic foods and caffeine and alcohol, then that's when I would definitely recommend adding the Paleo Cleanse and the Amino Detox capsules to support you. And if you do better in a group atmosphere, of course, I'll be doing more virtual groups throughout the year and would love to have you join again. It's always fun to do it a second time and compare it with the first experience. And I'll be changing things up a little bit as well as we go along. So I just want to really, again, congratulate you on completing this detoxification program. I mean, it's a huge, huge accomplishment, and I'm really, really proud of you. I hope that you enjoyed the process and that you tried several of the recipes that I sent and that you're feeling really good. I would love for you to provide feedback to me, and you can either do that on the Facebook forum if that is the easiest way for you to communicate. But I would also like all the participants to fill out a program evaluation form, which again is nutritionwithbeth.com/forms. And it's under detox registration forms. It's under program evaluation. It really means a lot. Your feedback means so much to me. And I just want to make sure that I'm serving you at the highest level. And so please, you know, provide your feedback, things that you absolutely loved about the cleanse, things that you would like to see done differently, or perhaps just something that you would have liked that you didn't get, but you would like to see it offered on the next cleanse. But thank you. I really do appreciate your feedback, and I always look at it and make changes based on the feedback that I get from my group participants. Because you're completed my cleanse and you invested already at this level, as a token of my appreciation, I'm going to be sending you a link, a special link, with a 10% discount that you can use for any of the Designs for Health supplements that you might want to continue using in maintenance, like the Paleo Meal Dairy Free, for example, or the greens, or perhaps, you know, a multivitamin mineral or a B complex. So that link will be coming shortly today or tomorrow. And please just reserve, you know, this link and this discount code is just for you. So I, you know, ask you to keep, you know, not to share that, to keep that discount code for you. Again, it's a token of my appreciation for investing in yourselves already and for completing the detoxification program. And as an extra bonus, I'm going to be sending you another code that you can use to receive a $300 discount on my targeted nutrition program. And my targeted nutrition program is all about taking it to the next level, working one-on-one with me to really assess your unique needs, your biochemistry, perhaps do some genetic testing, and really, really work closely with you to optimize how you feel and really live that life that you truly deserve. So that will be coming as well. So I'll pause again, and does anyone have any questions for me before we sign off for the day?
Beth, this is Heather. I just wanted to say thanks so much. It's been really a great experience for me. I've never done anything like this before, and I just really appreciate all your support.
Oh, Heather, it's so good to hear you on the call. Yeah. So you and Ray did well?
We did. It was great. I mean, Ray's going to continue, actually. He's going to do a little bit different, like the juice thing for a little bit.
Oh, good,
I also think that I would like to maybe talk to you a little bit more about doing the nutrition thing that you were just talking about.
Absolutely. Like, okay.
Yeah, so, but it was awesome. I mean, I cannot believe I did it. Like, I cannot believe for 21 days that I did, you know, that I hadn't had a piece of chocolate or coffee. So
I know, that's awesome. And what are some of the things you noticed, Heather? Did you notice that, you know, are you, you know, feeling a little different, more energy? Are you sleeping differently?
I had amazing dreams. My dreams were like, super, I mean, just like crystal clear, like it was real.
Oh, wow.
So, yeah, that was really crazy. I lost about 5 pounds.
Oh, good.
So that was awesome. But I felt better, and it was funny. I went to a friend's today this morning for a cup of tea, and she offered some banana bread or pumpkin bread, and I declined, which normally I probably would have had 2 pieces. So, It was an amazing experience for me to do something like this for myself. So I really appreciate you taking the time and just, it's been really awesome. And I know, I can talk to you offline as well, but I just wanted to shout out that, you know, I really appreciate it and thank you so much.
Well, thank you for joining the group this time along with Ray. That's awesome because I know Ray's done it a few times, so it was great to have you join this time. Yeah,
thanks.
Yeah, and I'm really glad. I mean, you know, what we want to, you know, notice are the shifts, right? And so I'm happy to hear that, you know, you've definitely noticed some shifts. And I don't know if you joined the beginning. Did you sign on a little later into the call?
I did. I was driving and I couldn't find the call, so I was late. So I'm going to listen to the other.
Yeah, listen to the beginning
because
that's really important, because what we talked about was reintroducing foods back into the diet and how to do that. So definitely listen to listen to the call, and also you can follow along with the PowerPoint presentation But that's very, very important because now is the time to, you know, if you're curious about whether a food is good or not for you, this it definitely is the time that you want to reintroduce it properly back into your diet to assess whether or not the food is toxic to you or actually the food is okay for you.
Okay.
Yeah. So we'll send out that call recording today, and then you can also look on the slides too. Just go to nutrition, you know, with Beth/forms.
Okay.
And it's the PowerPoint's there.
So is today like? Did it end yesterday?
And then today. Today. Yeah. Today. And there's some people that are going on for a few more days because they start a little late, or and some people just want to continue on, you know, for another week, which is absolutely fine too. Make it a 28-day. Okay, Heather. Well, we'll talk. We'll talk a little later. And again, thank you for joining. And have a great rest of the week.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. Thanks. Bye.
Bye.